Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Autumn is so beautiful. Cool, crisp, the apples being harvested, the pies and crumbles and cider donuts, and the cider itself, fresh and sweet with a wonderful kick, or these days, the big thing, hard cider, as old as the country, older, and now surging in popularity again. This hour On Point, apple cider, sweet and hard, as American as apple pie. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How do you take your cider these days? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We have a groaning table full of beautiful ciders in the studio today, and a great lineup of cider men and women to give us the lore and the latest. Joining me now in the studio is Louisa Spencer, co-owner with her husband Steve Wood of Poverty Lane Orchards, love that name, and Farnham Hill Ciders. Steve and Louisa are credited with paving the way for premium hard ciders comeback in the United States, and it is really a comeback. Louisa Spencer, thank you so much for being here. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Just seeing you, I smell apples in the air, and we've got cider all over this table. We're going to have plenty, and we will tell you about it, listeners. You'll be jealous before the hour's over. And with us from South Pumfret, Vermont, we're joined by writer, editor, and food and farm activist Ben Watson. He is the author of Cider, Hard and Sweet, History, Traditions, and Making Your Own. There's an excerpt from the wonderful book at our website, onpointradio.org. Ben Watson, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be with you.
We're going to have Lars Ringrud of Snowdrift Cider joining us soon from Wenatchee, Washington, on the other side of the country. But let's dive right in here. Ben, you said for a while now, you were saying in the 1990s, there's a cider renaissance, but in the foreword to the latest edition of your book, say you thought there was one then, there is really one now. What's going on, Ben?
Well, yeah, it's been growing organically for a long time, since the 1990s or even earlier, and in the last few years, people have rediscovered cider. It's been the category itself is the fastest growing drinks category in the world. It's I think in the last year it's grown by another 78%. So people are just rediscovering that it's a nice beverage. It's very light. It's very refreshing. It's great to drink all year long, and I think it's something new and exciting that people are enjoying rediscovering.
I mean, everybody loves apples. Everybody loves autumn. Here's a little how-to video. This is from Soon's Orchards, a local apple farm in New Hampton, New York, inviting folks to come and pick their apples and buy some other fall treats at the stand.
When you go to a tree, you want to hold the apple and you gently want to twist it and twist and twist and wait and have the tree give you the apple. It's like getting a gift from nature. While you're here, don't forget to stop by our store located just a few feet from here.
Louisa Spencer, I had a party recently and the young'un said, we've got to have hard cider. This was a first to me. Cider, love apple cider, but for me it's just sweet and fresh. Except when you keep it a while, and all cider goes hard after a while, I guess. But this was new to me, and it was the youngest guests at the party who were the most enthusiastic about it. I associate this with old times in the countryside and Johnny Appleseed and all the rest, but it's very right now, Louisa.
It is, and this has been coming for a while, I think, in a way, ever since Prohibition. Wine in America recovered from Prohibition much more quickly than cider because the meaning of the word cider was changed during Prohibition to the ephemeral brown juice of fall.
For children, and everybody else because exactly, it's not the least bit alcoholic.
Exactly. And there are stories of people taking their children to Europe and ordering cider and innocently giving the children cider and wondering why they're so sleepy in the back seat after lunch, that kind of thing.
It was a little hard.
The word cider globally is exactly like the word wine. It implies an alcoholic beverage made from apples, full stop. That's it. And so, and the qualification hard is an American thing to distinguish it from what we...
To make it through prohibition without getting in trouble with the law.
In a way,
and it's delicious. I mean, soft, sweet, fresh, whatever you want to call it, not hard is...
It's fabulous. Yeah, but you can't hold it. You can't keep it.
Right.
Unless you freeze it. And fermentation initially had entirely to do with preservation. You know, out there on the frontier when Johnny Appleseed was flinging the seeds around,
yes,
very few of those apples were bakeable into a pie. They were sour, mean apples. But they made a reasonable cider in some places where the water wasn't quite hygienic. Everybody drank it because cider is hygienic.
And Ben, that's all that mattered. I mean, people, they were happy to have cider apples, which do not want to bite into the old sourest of those that Johnny Appleseed would have spread around, Ben. But they wanted their cider, and those apples brought it.
Right. And he was distributing trees that were what we call seedling trees. They were all grown from seed. And apples don't come – you can't get the same variety of apple by planting a seed. So what you were getting was maybe a 1 in 10,000 chance that something would be fairly edible. So really, there was that rationale for turning all this stuff into hard cider. People liked to drink it, and it was a homestead. It was the perfect homestead beverage and way to, as Lulu said, to preserve it, because you couldn't hold it, and yet it made something that was so important that it was not only something that you drank all the time, but people made enough, because one big apple tree will make a heck of a lot of cider on your farm, and they would use it as a means of currency, because in the early days there wasn't a lot of hard currency around either. So you would actually pay people like who are professional people who were non-farmers.
Yeah.
You'd pay the minister, you know, you'd say, well, okay, well, you know, the town will pay you 10 barrels of cider for the winter.
And the parson would be kept in cider and be a little happy. I heard you say, Lulu, get out the cider, and we're getting a little casual already here with Louise.
Well,
and
we've known each other a very, very long time.
Hey, before we get to the hard cider, I realize it's redundant in your world maybe, but see it still. We've got a nice, just sweet, fresh one here. We're going to taste it. We're going to taste a lot this hour. Ben, you remind us that fresh, sweet cider ain't what it used to be. There's a lot of push for pasteurization that's taking away some of that super thing that makes it alive as you write in your mouth.
Yeah, I encourage people to drink what I call real cider, whether it's hard cider or sweet cider. There really is a difference, I think, in the organoleptic qualities between something that's been pasteurized, heat pasteurized especially, and just as a natural cider, you know, unprocessed at all. There was a big scare back in the mid-90s, late 90s, about E. coli, a new strain of E. coli, which is still going on, and the FDA would like to try to force everybody to pasteurize. And in some states like New York, they do. You can't sell unpasteurized cider. But it really affects the taste. And for people who really want to try the real thing, it's worth going to an orchard where it's still legal to sell, in most states, to sell it from a farm stand or an orchard.
We've got the real thing right here on the studio tabletop, Woodland Farm, South Glastonbury, Connecticut. Keep cold, not pasteurized, all in bold. And we're trying. What do you think, Lulu?
Oh, it's pretty good. I mean, it's like ours at this time of year. Some of the later varieties are a bit richer and a bit more intense. But this is pretty good.
It's nice. It doesn't have as much kick as it can have. I mean, I like cider when it really wakes you up in the mouth.
I think you're talking about that acidic bite.
Yes.
Yeah, because it obviously it's non-alcoholic, so the kick thing is just in the flavor. But you're right. The acid is kind of low, and that's the way ours – our first batch was.
But it's yummy as can be. It doesn't taste like what Ben calls the boring, denatured cider that we get in the supermarket these days. Let's jump right over to hard. And here's our sort of first of the day. And what we're going from sort of a sort of you can get it anywhere to the really fine stuff, if that's the right word.
And this is a heads up. I need to give you a heads up.
Yeah.
Most people expect bubbles in their fermented cider, at least in this country. Still ciders are common in the rest of the world, but extremely exotic in this country, so I thought I'd bring something that's really out of the box, and this is our extra dry still, which means that it doesn't taste that much like apples any more than good wine tastes like grapes.
Right.
And it has zero sugar of any kind and no bubbles. So
it's beautiful. From Farnham Hill, Louisa Spencer's Farnham Hill Ciders. It's in a wine bottle or a wine style bottle, and we're sipping. Mmm. The bouquet is like wine. I wouldn't know before I tasted that I was in apple country necessarily.
Well, exactly. And that is the sort of the third stage in cider understanding, because in the wine world, the word grapey is a bit of an insult to a wine.
This is apple country.
You know, it's a little kind of,
and it's definitely not grapes. You've got the apples on the table that this came from, and they're little, not tiny, not Hawthorne, but they're small.
Yeah.
With dense apples.
Well, if you want to brace yourself, the first of those is Ashton Bitter. It's a cider apple, and it's not crunchy because it doesn't need to be. And it's not juicy.
What you are
experiencing
is bitter.
Yes, you're experiencing a very good, worthwhile, bittersweet apple.
Which means what Johnny Appleseed took around?
Well, actually, no. Oh. In fact, his sowing was much more random.
It's not just sour.
These have been developed on purpose, the way wine grapes are, with great concentration to have either very high tannins and sugars or very high acids and sugars. The one next to it is a so-called bitter sharp. I mean, that's really mean. That's super, super.
Oh, sharp as well. Okay, those are not eaten apples.
No.
Farnham Hill, extra dry, still cider. This one, 7.5% alcohol by volume. Terrific. We are drinking cider in the studio today. Sweet to begin with, extra dry still right here with a kick, hard cider. Louisa Spencer, please stand by. Ben Watson. Listeners, I got a lot of sour apple in there. You can join us. Have you been offered hard cider at a cocktail party lately, at a craft beer pub, at a fancy restaurant? Have you taken to hard cider? This is Bill Haley and his comments with Ida, sweet as apple cider.
Ida, sweet as apple cider. Sweeter.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about hard cider, sweet cider, apple season, and the country's new mania for an old drink, hard cider mania. We have ciders out the orchard here in the studio today. They're popular all over the place. You may have been surprised to see ads on television for hard cider. Here's a I think a big companies involved here too. The Smith and Ford cider, major national producer, owned by Miller Coors. The ad skit takes place in a quarry with a bearded, vaguely Lincoln-esque fellow pointing to a giant laborer who smashes huge rocks with one swing of a hammer.
This is Smith and Ford hard cider. It's like Jacob here, strong, sturdy, but not too sweet.
Built from apples, built to refresh. Smith & Forge Hard Cider, made strong.
A hard cider from the company that owns Miller Coors. Ben Watson, you've got big and small players in this arena. How's that break down these days by production, by numbers, Ben?
Well, most of the numbers that you'll see, Tom, on the, when you calculate what's being made, is mostly calculated from the big cider makers or the bigger cider makers. So, it's in the hundreds of millions of gallons at this point, I would say, which is, again, phenomenally greater than it was 20 years ago or more, 20 or even 25 years ago. And, again, it's a lot of the stuff is market driven, because stuff is fermented apples, really, or at best they're fermented apples. Often it's concentrate that's being made, being fermented by the larger people. So they have to differentiate by this, I have a manly cider. It's interesting because it's so market driven. And one of the things about cider has always been that nobody's been ever able to figure out whether it's more like beer or more like wine. Well, really, it's cider. It's different. But if you had to compare it to something, it's made like wine. It's not brewed. People often say, do you brew your own cider? And I say, well, no, because you don't brew cider. There's no heating involved. Historically, that was one reason that it was made in England, because they had a huge wood shortage over there in the a few hundred years ago. And to make ale, you had to boil a wort. But to make cider, you didn't have to boil anything. It just fermented.
And you remind us this goes way back. Ancient Romans, very big on cider, Ben.
They were somewhat big on cider. They liked all kinds of things. They liked making, they called it pomerium. And it's a little unclear as to whether it was made from apples or pears. They didn't really make that much distinction in the early days. But the interesting thing is, 2,000 years ago, they were making cider in northern Spain, and they still are making it there. We just got back from a trip to Asturias and the Basque country. And those people there are making it very traditionally with apple varieties that have been grown there for millennia. And it's just wonderful to see such an unbroken, interesting tradition of cider making.
Traditional international hotspots, southwest England, northwest France, northern Spain, and as you say these days, Poland, Mexico, New Zealand, and all parts of the United States. You've got maybe 150 producers now, only a couple of dozen when you first started writing back in the 90s, and ranging from, you know, the sort of incubators of the Northeast and the Northwest to the Great Lakes region, the South, the Southwest. We've got a caller in Minneapolis, Louisa. Asking about what loves cider and says, what about these tales of old Yankees barreling the apple juice and leaving it out for the winter to turn into hard cider? Does that sound familiar to you, Louisa Spencer?
Well, there's a lot of stories, and what went on people's individual farms is highly individual. People did all kinds of things to raise the alcohol content of cider. They would add sugar. They'd add all kinds of craziness. They made some really paralyzing stuff, which I guess fit under the name of cider. And I believe the old guys would go downstairs in the evening and not come up until the next day. Some of it was really disabling. I believe if they were freezing it, it was in order to concentrate the alcohol and what sugar might remain. So it was a way of distilling.
Louisa Spencer, co-owner of Farnham Hill Ciders and the Poverty Lane Orchards with her husband Steve Wood, and Ben, author of Cider Hard and Sweet. In the front of your book, Ben, there's this great old-timey photograph. I don't know what year this is, maybe the turn of the last century. You've got, it looks like, a couple of barns here. You're out in the barnyard maybe with a cider press. The guys look out of the barbershop quartet or down from the hills. They've got a bunch of jugs here, one with the old tip the jug over the shoulder into the glass with a couple of guys here drinking, another ladling or pouring through looks like cheesecloth or something here into a jug, I guess, to take out the flecks perhaps, and a clutch of women in the background. It looks like, you know, laughing, tittering, maybe drinking. Describe this photo. What's going on here, Ben?
It's a photo that was taken at a farm called Log Cabin Farm in Dummerston, Vermont, which is down in the southeast corner of the state near Brattleboro. Mm-hmm. But it was from about 1900 and or a little bit later. And it was a setup shot, but it was accurate in terms of the press they were using. And the fellow who's pressing the cider actually, I believe, died in World War I. I mean, he was a World War I soldier, and his brothers were there in the front. And the women, if you look at it very carefully, it's a wonderful photo. I just fell in
really
love with
is.
The photo. They're using straws, if you can see it, that you can barely see that they're using like 3-foot straws, and the women are drinking out of the barrel.
Oh, I didn't get that, but once I do, I see why they're laughing. It is hard cider, after all. Benjamin Franklin writing here, it is indeed bad to eat apples. It is better to make them all into cider. from Ben's book. Carol in Coventry, Connecticut. Carol, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just called in because I want to thank everyone who's ever even thought of making hard cider. I'm gluten intolerant. I get to drink hard cider. It's so fun.
I had not thought of that. And do you make it yourself? Do you buy? What do you know of this world, Carol?
Oh no. I make too many things. I have to eat on my own. This other people make. It's lovely. I've tried a variety of different companies. Angry Orchard is one. Johnny Appleseed's another. Stella is another. My favorite is when they combine things like cinnamon or ginger in with the hard cider.
I love it. Carol, thanks for calling from Connecticut. Let's get Travis in Virginia Beach. Virginia, Travis, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was just calling, and it just actually kind of goes with what she said about the cinnamon. They now, at most bars in the area here in Virginia Beach and Norfolk, they will mix hard cider with cinnamon whiskey to make an extra, a different kind of more alcoholic beverage out of it. And as well, they also have other places where they'll mix something else like draft beer with it. There's at Tap House in Norfolk, they'll mix a Brickleberry pear cider with Guinness draft over top of it. Makes a really strong drink that is just as good. They seem to be understanding how to mix apple cider with just about anything.
Travis, it sounds like great fun. I must say, you have our orchard owner's eyebrows going up here. Louisa, do you have a purist's offense at mixing here?
Oh, not offense at all. I'm just thinking what this shows is the extreme breadth of the category, even now. Because we are very much of the sort of wine mindset, and we're all about celebrating our fruit and the expression
yes.
of the certain hillside and a certain year and certain varieties. And we get different results from our mostly French and English cider apples in New Hampshire from what they would ever produce in England. So we are just all about the fruit. And but anything that makes people understand that the apple is a supremely sly and creative fruit,
yeah.
and that if you want to just ferment it, or if you want to mix it with whatever
Fireball,
you're going to get all kinds of interest and singularity and character and all of that.
Joshua, Traverse City, Michigan, apple country as well. Joshua, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I also come from a large fruit producing area. Mainly known for cherries, but in the last couple of decades, we've also seen a huge growth in the vineyards there. I think there's over 40 vineyards in the northern Michigan area. And we've also seen a huge growth in the cider and mead also. I have a good friend of mine who about 10 years ago started producing his own mead, and then in the last 5 years, a lot of the bars in the area started picking it up, and now he has a mead house that just exclusively serves his mead. And the same is true of, we have a cider house in Traverse City as well now that opened a couple of years ago that just serves cider.
Joshua, if I go into a bar in Traverse City, might I order hard cider?
I would think that you would be hard-pressed to find a bar in Traverse City that didn't have cider and mead on tap.
And do they make their own, or is it all brought in?
Both. There is definitely locally sourced mead and cider, but there's also quite a bit of, with like you said, with the advent and the rebirth of cider as an art form, we see a lot of people looking to import. And in an area where they're already used to importing and exporting, this, you know, wine and everything, it just falls right in line.
Joshua in Traverse City, Michigan, thanks so much for your call. I want to bring Lars Ringsrud in. He joins us from Wenatchee, Washington, Washington State, in the heart of the Northwest's apple country. Co-owner, brand manager of his family's cidery, Snowdrift Cider Company, 34 years old. His family's owned the apple orchards for generations. 12 years ago, started getting into fermenting hard cider. Lars Ringsrud, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having us on.
We are going to taste some of the lovely product of your labors there. I've got one here. This is Washington State Hard Cider, Cider Makers Reserve, full-flavored. What can you tell us about this one, Lars?
Yeah, so Cider Makers Reserve showcases what we want to bring out of the apples. We got into cider making through being orchardists, and we have a passion for apples and all their breadth of flavor and character. And as you mentioned, about 12 years ago, we discovered cider apples, and that just totally expanded our horizons. So we discovered apples with tannin, like you tasted, bright acidity, just loads of character. So as we were making fresh juice for decades with the family, we would appreciate the distinctions in the fresh juice. Once we discovered the cider apples, it took it to a whole other level, and we started fermenting it, maturing it. And there's just so much nuance that can come through a fermented cider that's aged. In this case, it's been through the method Champenoise, so it's naturally conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
It gives it a bright sparkle. Loads
that is in-bottle fermentation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm reading here, you've got wine language very much applying here. And by the way, so this has got that sparkle to it. It has got really a kick to it. Complex tannins, bright acidity, lively sparkle, pairs well with French and English cuisine, cave-aged cheeses, double creme brulees, rustic breads. This will cut right through the smooth dairy of all that, Lars.
Yeah, absolutely. Tannin and dairy do wonderfully together. The proteins and the fats and the cheeses and the milk really mesh well with tannin, especially with cider apple tannin.
Lars,
Cider Makers Reserve carries a lot of that character and bring some kind of caramely, earthy, appealing aromatic wood notes.
Very much the wood notes here, just delicious. I mean, you're 30-something. What do you think is driving the popularity of cider, hard cider, among younger Americans these days?
Oh, part of it has definitely been generated by the expansion of craft beer. Mm-hmm. So lots of complexity and breadth in that category has opened up people's eyes to different sets of flavors within beer. And with the bubbles, there is some similarity. But as you say, cider is definitely technically a wine. Cider is its own category for most of the world. So that's kind of opened up people's eyes. And along with that comes, you know, a certain degree of trendiness, much more exposure for sure.
Yeah.
But as Ben mentioned, it's, you know, it's refreshing, it's delicious.
It sure is.
It's something different.
Snowdrift Cider Maker's Reserve, that's 8.3% alcohol by volume. Louisa, we've got another from Farnham Hill. Semi-dry cider. Describe this one to us. It's a lovely color, Louisa.
It is a little drier than Lars's. Now see.
Mm-hmm.
We get usually a maximum of 8% fermentation because the sugars in our apples have a shorter growing season in which to develop. So we're going to get something.
Delicious.
Indeed, complex and fruity and expressive of all kinds of things, including funk. I mean, there's a lot of common qualities between red wine and ciders made with these particular apples because of the tannic element.
Mm.
It looks like a blonde drink, but
yes,
in fact, it's got more in common.
That's true.
With red wine. And it's got a very cleansing finish, and it just makes an awful lot of foods taste really great. And if you get over enthusiastic at 7.5% or 8.5%, you keep your savoir
it's
faire
okay.
for quite a while.
That is a very clean, lovely taste.
Yeah.
I mean, with poultry, that would be fabulous, it seems to me.
Well, it's no accident that the rest of the world, where cider is normal, they drink three times as much in the summer.
Okay.
They don't have
for
this
summer.
Mental,
I would be all over that. Gary in Austin, Texas. Gary, thank you for calling. You're in the middle of a big cider tasting.
And I don't want to talk about cider tasting. I want to talk about what cider could do for apples, which have some real threats genetically to them. And it was the loss of cider drinking which generated the end of the multitude of wild apple species that were in orchards everywhere that generated the problem. Now, after Prohibition, the only thing that was left was eating apples. They're exceptionally rare. They've been very highly hybridized.
Mm-hmm.
And because they haven't evolved, it takes lots of chemicals and pesticides to grow them. And they're in danger of having one of the funguses or bugs wipe out, you know, basically all of the apples that we have, or make them uneconomic to grow.
So cider and cider apples could put us on a healthier path here, you're saying, Gary?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we don't have a big wild gene stock to dip back into because all the trees went away with Prohibition, and this could bring the non-eating, quote-unquote, wild apple gene stock back.
Gary, I love it. I love it. We're up against a break here. Forgive me, Ben Watson, very quickly, saving the planet with cider apples, Ben.
I'm all for it. It's something that we don't have really a lot of wild varieties of apples, but they do come from Kazakhstan, and there are efforts being made to import some of that natural resistance from those apples over into our new apple varieties here.
Ben Watson, author of Cider, Hard and Sweet, Please Stand By in Vermont. Louisa Spencer from Farnham Hill Ciders with me here. Lars Ringsrud in Wenatchee, Washington State, at Snowdrift Cider Company. Please stand by. Listeners, you can join us. What's your question on cider? What do you think of when you think of hard cider? We'll go to the break with, what is this, Scrumpy and Western, The Wurzels, a Scrumpy and Western band from Somerset, England, very big in the 70s. This is one of the big hits. I'm a cider drinker. That's Zyder. They're from Zymerzot.
I am the cider.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with a studio full of ciders. Beautiful, beautiful hard ciders, as we call them. Hard ciders are taking off in this country. They can be pretty mainstream. We'll hit some of those here. They can be very fine. We've already had some of those, and we will have more. You can join us this hour. Hard cider, sweet cider, apple season, the country's new mania for an old, old drink is what we're talking about with Louisa Spencer of Poverty Lane Orchards and Farnham Hill Ciders. Lars Ringsrud joins us from Washington State, co-owner, brand manager at the cidery Snowdrift Cider Company. We've got some of his ciders on the table alongside Louisa's here. Ben Watson is with us from South Pomfret, Vermont, author of Cider, Hard and Sweet History, Traditions, and Making Your Own. And there is a lot of all of that in here. I want to keep right on this train. We've got more to taste here. But for Yvonne in Williamsburg, Virginia, join us, Yvonne. What do you know?
Hi. nice talking to you. I'm excited that you're talking about cider.
So are we. More excited by the minute.
It's the only type of alcohol, I guess, that I actually enjoy. I'm allergic to some wines. I think beer tastes like hay. And
I like hay.
I think it's awful. But anyway, the cider I want to tell you about is from a cidery in Richmond, Virginia. It's called Blue Bee Cider.
And Blue Bee, like a bumblebee? Blue Bee, okay.
I believe the blue bees are the type of bee that pollinate. Some of the flowers, and the owner there is Courtney Anderson. I think she's now Maley, and she's doing some really exciting things, mixing some berries in, hops, all sorts of things. Has a cider club. You can go to special events at her place.
I love it, Yvonne. Out to the cidery there in Blue Bee Cider. Let us keep that lovely name in mind and get one more right here. JJ in Cambridge, Massachusetts. JJ, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Well, as this cider goes down, I just everything's just great. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a great conversation. Everyone sounds so happy. I'm really excited about this conversation because I own a bar and a catering company that only uses local ingredients in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And this has opened up a whole new set of prospects for us because wine isn't really something. I mean, there are wineries locally, but there's not a ton of selection. And with beer, there's a lot of local beer brewers, but they're not using all local ingredients, even though they're delicious.
Yeah.
So we're really, really excited about this growth and there's more of an availability. I feel like I hear about new ciders now as it just all the time, the way I was hearing about new craft beers 5 years ago.
And are people ordering at the bar, JJ? What's the popularity?
Yes. Oh, yes. They love it. And, you know, your caller earlier who talked about the gluten-free piece, as people are identifying more and more gluten sensitivities, cider is really helpful because it is delicious.
Yeah.
And it's not enormously high in alcohol, so you can enjoy it the way you would drink beer. You could have one or two. And
yeah.
It's just terrific. And I love the variety and the seasonal flavors. You get people adding seasonal fruits.
And I am learning today, JJ, as I know you must be aware, there's a ton of subtlety and wonderment here. This is not just old sweet cider with a little alcoholic kick to it. We're off in really interesting territory. JJ, good luck with the bar. I appreciate your call from Cambridge. One more and we'll drink some more from Dubuque, Iowa. Constance, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm so happy to tell you my favorite memory of my year in France, which was when I was on a bike trip in Brittany, and it was summertime. It was, I think, early September, and everybody was, I mean, there were orchards everywhere and selling cider, and I wanted some, but I didn't want to get drunk because I was biking a lot every day, and
I didn't want to
be drunk. And so I said to this farmer, do you have anything that hasn't been fermented yet? Do you have anything with no alcohol?
Yeah.
And he was just so happy to help me, and he said, "Oh, no alcohol here." And I said, "Are you sure? No alcohol?" "Oh, no alcohol." Okay. So I drank it, and it was really yummy, and it just tasted just like summer and apples and Brittany, and it was wonderful. And so I went off biking, and about half an hour later, I just thought, "Oh gosh,
where am I?
Am I sick? Do I have low blood sugar?" I was just so dizzy, and suddenly I realized, God, I'm drunk.
Constance, your summer in France sounds fake. I mean, yes means no, and no means yes. When they talk cider, I guess that means a little alcohol to them, and you got it. I love it. I love it. Constance, thank you for sharing your summer in France and Brittany on bicycle. I can imagine it so vividly just now. Hey, Lars, in Washington State, we've got another of yours here. This is your Orchard Select. Can you describe it for us, Lars?
Yeah, so Orchard Select highlights kind of the culinary apple, the heirloom apple, with some bitter sharps in there, too. So it's going to be a lot brighter profile. You pick up some citrus and tropical tones in there.
Yes.
And just a touch of sweetness to kind of round out that fruit.
Fantastic. I mean, that is really great. Are the What are the prices like for this quality of hard cider? Is it wine-style prices, or I have no idea, Lars.
Yeah, our bottles are 15 to 20 retail, typically.
And are you selling mainly retail or into bars? What's the business look like these days?
Yeah, it's about 50-50. Out in the Northwest, we have a lot of cider on draft. So that goes into kegs and is served by the glass. Yeah, and for our stuff, it's about at wine prices, and a lot of that has to do with, for these cider apples, they have one purpose, and that is to go into cider. So using other processor apples from the grocery stream, you can make ciders for less, but when you grow apples for one purpose, it has a little bit of a higher cost, but also it comes with a whole lot more flavor and complexity, and so it's a good fit.
Snowdrift's Orchard Select, that is really delicious. Ben Watson, give us a little geographic tour here, the way it's made, where it's made, different ways, how it's sold, retail, or by the barrel, in the bar, where it's produced around the country. What's it look like if we look at the map of the country, Ben?
Well, a few years ago, you know, as I think we said before, it would have been a lot of people were starting up in the Northeast. But there were also a few people who were experimenting with traditional European cider apples out in the Pacific Northwest. And those two regions really drove the rise in popularity in cider. But now, as we've seen before, you had a caller from Traverse City, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tremendous area for, well, growing all kinds of fruit. I mean, it's just the Great Lakes are a wonderful place. And there are probably half a dozen cideries very close to Traverse City now, or wineries that are also making cider. So you've got the Great Lakes involved in a big way, especially Michigan. And you've got the South now, too. Virginia has a very active cider culture. New England, different parts of New York State, there are different regions. So it's really becoming we used to ask ourselves, you know, is there a regional style of cider? Can you really tell a cider from here or there? And in the past, that wasn't really true because there weren't enough people who were making it. But now that so many people are coming in and want to use local fruit or want to grow their own fruit, you're starting to see people experimenting with the varieties that grow best in their areas. And I think that's one of the really most exciting things about cider, that you can have a cider that's more representatively Virginian, for instance. They might be using old Virginia wine saps, and Harrison, which is a wonderful Middle Atlantic apple that's coming back, making a comeback. It was thought to be it was functionally extinct, and now it's taking over the nation again. And Hughes Crab, which is grown at Monticello in the North Orchard, and which Jefferson used, Jefferson Cider Maker.
Yeah.
All these wonderful things. And in New England, we have the same thing. We're rediscovering varieties like Black Oxford and old heirlooms like that that make very, very interesting ciders. We're still learning a tremendous amount about this. And I think even Louisa would admit that, you know, we're still in the learning phase 20 or 30 years later.
All we talk about is how we don't know anything and we're just stone ignorant.
Well, I don't think that ignorant tasting these. I mean, I have to say my eyes are really being opened here, or my palate, to just how fine these can be. I mean, this is not just a backyard drink. As much as I love a nice backyard drink, these could go at any table. Jack in Nashville, Tennessee. Jack, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Very excited to be on the air. Thank you.
Yeah, what do you think, Jack?
I love how you just said that cider has kind of been elevated to you, because it's exactly what I'm calling about. For years now, I've been associated cider with beer, kind of a backyard drink, like you said, a sweeter, refreshing alternative to a beer, especially in the summertime. But very recently, I was at a restaurant that had a tasting menu, and they were pairing drinks, and they paired this fantastic unpasteurized cider from Normandy, France. And it just opened my eyes to cider as a, looking at it a different way. I started pairing it. Instead of wine, I would serve, at some dinner parties I would host, I would serve cider instead. And people just loved it. And it's kind of elevated cider for me, kind of just beyond kind of pairing it with beer to now linking it on the same tier with wine.
I'm there, Jack. And who knew? I have to say, at the start of this hour, I really had no idea. I appreciate your call from Nashville, Jack. I think we've got next to taste here the number one cider by sales in this country, made in Cincinnati by the Boston Beer Company, also known as Sam Adams. Apples imported from Europe, French bittersweet apples, Italian culinary apples. First introduced in 2012, this is Angry Orchard. Ben, what do you say about Angry Orchard?
It's a, it's an uncomplicated, fairly representative style.
In a beer bottle, more or less.
Yeah, and it's formed differently, and it's also made quite differently from the other ciders that you're trying. I mean, to make it in a larger scale, more industrial way, and to keep it shelf stable and to send it across the country, you need to make it, and to make it throughout the year, things that you have to do that Lars and Lulu wouldn't do with their ciders. It's not to say it's either bad or good. It's what people prefer. Certainly people like the Angry Orchard and can enjoy it, and I think that's great. And it's really helped to move the whole category forward.
I mean, Louisa, when you sip
but
this,
I would say that the I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. I would say that the Italian apples that they're using, if you go over to Italy, the main apples in Italy are pretty much the same dessert apples that you find over here, at least in northern Italy, like Golden Delicious and things like that. So don't think that they're indigenous Italian varieties that they're using.
Yeah. I mean, Louisa, this is much – when you drink this, you know you're drinking apple cider. This doesn't taste that far from sweet, fresh cider, though
right.
It's clearly alcoholic.
Right.
But
yeah, that's
for the uninitiated,
the big, yeah.
You know where you are here. You're not lost in wine country.
Right, exactly. It? Well, there's no reason to – I mean, that was what I think of as the sort of last frontier for Americans just kind of getting more relaxed about cider, because everybody understands that a grape wine is not going to shout grape at you.
Mm-hmm.
But in the mass market for cider, the makers are pretty convinced that they have to make stuff that shouts apple at the drinker. And those of us on the, smaller end who are all about the self-expression of the fruit and the character and the terroir and the ooh la la,
yeah.
We are going to let it go where it goes and then decide whether we like it enough to put it in a bottle. And that's why we get, in our stuff, we more tropical fruit and more unexpected things, including animal, vegetable, and mineral hints that aren't necessarily found in Angry Orchard. We love those guys, though. The Boston Beer guys hung out at our place for years in the fall, way back when they were researching cider, and the fact they worked any bittersweet into this at all is an achievement.
Lars, you've got these fine ciders at Snowdrift. Do you also make one that shouts apple for the new initiate?
No.
Simple as that.
Two-tasted is the closest thing to shouting apple, because the taste really does change once it's fermented. I mean, you have apple juice going in and cider coming out, and you might have some hint of the fruit that it was, but just like Louisa said, like wine, it's wine at the end. It's not grape juice. So.
Yes, it is. Jeff in Boston, thank you for calling, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've really been enjoying the conversation.
Good.
I love commercial ciders. I've been drinking them here in New England for years, but I wanted to speak up for the home cider makers.
Yes, please.
I've been a home brewer for about 25 years, and about 15 years ago, I started to make my own hard cider, too. And it is about the easiest thing in the world to do.
Give us the 1, 2, 3.
Find some good unpasteurized cider. Here in New England, it's very easy to find places that pick your owns and such that are selling that. Get hold of some yeast. You can use regular yeast or beer or wine yeast or even cider yeast. They're easy to get online, or there's stores in near most cities. Here in the Boston area, there's a few places you can get them. And you put the yeast in the cider. You put an airlock on, and you wait. And 2 weeks later, you have hard cider.
2 weeks? And if you wait longer, does it change? Does it become more alcoholic as it goes?
Yeah, it gets harder and harder. That's one of the things that's different about beer, is beer will usually stop getting more and more alcoholic. But sometimes the yeast that like cider, they will just keep going and going and going until you get what I call jet fuel. So after a couple weeks, you start to taste it, and you enjoy it when it's nice and fresh, and it's as sparkly as you want.
Jeff, hero of the home brew, I'm very glad you call with that. I mean, Ben, you say the same thing, that in terms of simplicity, if that's what you want, you can certainly do it. If you go on that track, does it become vinegar at some point, Ben, or no?
Well, it does, but it has to go through the hard cider stage before it becomes vinegar. It's sort of like turning it on its head. You know, you want to exclude air from it after it settles down a little bit. You need air at the beginning, and then you put the air on once it's going, and then you want to exclude air for a while, and then when it becomes hard cider, if you want
vinegar, you do exactly the same thing that you would never do making hard cider. You pour it into a big thing, expose it to the air, and put it in a warm place, and it'll eventually turn into vinegar.
I don't know if it's the cider. It sounds like you just moved from the moon to Saturn there or somewhere. Calling in from NASA, this cider has some even audio effects.
It wants to become vinegar, Tom, eventually.
The acetobacter will visit in the end.
Yeah. Lars, how's the crop this year out in Washington State at Snowdrift Cider Company?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, we've got a good amount of apples, and we've just had a great summer. So we've got some good sugar, great color, which, you know, looks great now, but of course we turn it into cider. But what we like out here is the heat in the summer and the cold nights of fall really brings out some extra characteristics in our cider apples.
Dear listeners, I say with extra happiness that I hope you have a wonderful autumn, maybe with a little cider in it. And I want to thank everyone for being with us here today. Ben Watson, author of Cider, Hard and Sweet, History, Traditions, and Making Your Own in South Pomfret, Vermont. Ben, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Lars Ringsrud in Wenatchee, Washington at Snowdrift Cider Company. Lars, good luck with everything. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
And Louisa Spencer of Poverty Lane Orchards and Farnham Hill Ciders Delicious. Thank you, Louisa.
Thank you.
We will go out with the Johnny Appleseed Suite, written by American composer Robert Kerr, performed here by Mark O'Connor, Marin Alsup, and the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. Cheers. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.